Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing, the writing life, as well as some wonderful video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find that little magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA as well as their stupendous yearly writers conference, go to pnwa.org. That conference is coming right up, ladies and gentlemen. It will be July 28th to the 30th, I think, or 31st, that Sunday. I believe you can still grab a spot there if you want. There are going to be tons of agents and editors, workshops galore. There's also going to be a number of master classes. I'm teaching a memoir master class. Bob Mayer is teaching a publishing master class. I believe Robert Dagoni, who's going to be this keynote speaker, best-selling Amazon Thomas and Mercer author. He's going to be teaching a class on craft and storytelling. And then Donald Moss will be doing his breakout novel masterclass on Sunday. Now, those masterclasses, I should point out, if you're in the Northwest area, if you don't want to go to the whole conference, you can pay just to go to the masterclasses. And they're great. They're great. Well, I can speak for the others. I love teaching the memoir masterclass. If you've got one you want to sign up, I think there's still room. Go to pnwa.org, and you can do so. So today, we're going to do it again. We're going to do the Fearless Writing Masterclass today. We did it last week. Went great. So we're going to keep doing it. We're going to do it again today. And it's very simple, Fearless Writing Masterclass. The question is this. Think about your own writing experience. Think about the writing experience you're having now, how often you write, what it's like when you write, what it's like when you publish or don't publish or try to publish. And then think about the experience you'd like to have, the expanded writing experience. Maybe you want to finish that book. Maybe you want to get an agent. Maybe you want to sell a million copies. Maybe you just want to write without constant struggle and feel blocked every day. I don't know what it is. Maybe you want to live without the critic hanging over your shoulder. I don't know what it is. The question is, what is it that stands between you and that? I would have that expanded experience except for what? What is that thing? That's the questions we're going to be looking at today. And as always, with me to help with those questions, my fearless partner, Mr. R.J. Jeffries. R.J., how are you doing?
I'm well, Bill. Good afternoon, and I'm so excited about us doing another installment in this wonderful Fearless Writing series.
I'm excited too, R.J. I love it. I love doing this, and love is the operative word, R.J. Love is the operative word. I published an essay in the New York Times on Friday in their wellness section. It was an essay about my son and me and my family. It was called No One is Broken, and it was sort of about families and life and autism somewhat, but it was really about unconditional love, and that's what we had to sort of use, so to speak, to be of use to my son. And that's what we're talking about today, unconditional love. Unconditional love for the story we're telling, for the poem we're writing, because this is the truth. If you want to write fearlessly, you have to have unconditional interest, unconditional curiosity in the story, in the poem, in the novel. What do I mean by that? I mean, you like the story just because you like it. You don't like it because someone else says they like it. You don't like it because you think it's going to sell 100,000 copies. You don't like it because it got 50 hits on your website. No, your interest in it, what allows you to write it, is that you like it because you like it. You're interested because you're interested. It's unconditional. The only condition of your interest is your interest. It's unconditional. And it is from that place that the best and truest writing really occurs. All the fear, all the doubt, what if it's not good enough? What if other people don't like it? That's conditional. That's you wondering about the world, wondering about that over which you have no control, what other people will think of it. While you're writing, you have to forget about everything except your interest in the piece. And here's the beauty of that particular formula. The more you focus your attention just on the piece you're interested in, allow yourself to write just from your own curiosity and nothing else, the more likely you are to get the kind of reaction your little ego perhaps hoped for once you're done publishing. It is the forgetting about other people, or once you're done writing, it is the forgetting about other people that allows you to focus in a way to write the piece to reach the people most clearly and most effectively. That's how it works. It's very simple. You have to love it just because you love it. And when you sink into that wonderful experience of just loving it because you love it, you are sitting in your confidence. When you love it because you love it, you are seeing it as clearly as you can see it. And your doubt about the peace, your doubt just because you can't predict the future, just because you don't know what's going to happen with it, your doubt becomes like a cloud over that thing, and you have to try to write through it. And the more you don't recognize the cloud of fear that lays over it, the questions like, is it any good? Can I finish this? Will people like it? All those fearful questions that obscure your vision of the thing you're trying to write, that literally form like a filter between you and the thing you're trying to see clearly so that you can translate it into words, the more you invite those kinds of thoughts in, the harder it is to write and the less clear the writing is. But the more you can focus simply on the thing you want to write about without the questions of what will happen to it and who will like it, instead of asking who will like it and is it any good, just what do I want to say and have I said it, is what's interesting to me and have I translated it, the more you can rest in that, the more you rest in the power, in your own power, and the more you feel your creative power, and the more you write the thing you actually wanted to write. That's how it works. That's how it works, RJ. It's how it works for me, that's for sure.
And also, that analogy you just gave about the cloud is just perfect.
Yeah, it's what it is. And it gets between, you know, if you imagine the thing is in your head, you're trying to see it in your mind's eye, in your writer's imaginative eye. You're trying to perceive it. And fear becomes like a filter. It obscures it. And unless you realize that you're thinking these thoughts that are counterproductive to the thing you're trying to write, you might not even understand why the thing is not as clear as you want it to be. Got to get clear about what you're thinking. So that's what we're going to do today. That's the foundation of this teaching of fearless writing. And as I've said before, I'll say it again. If nothing else, if you get nothing else from this little masterclass and the book I'm writing based on it called Fearless Writing, take away only this. You don't have to care what anybody else thinks of what you write. Your writing begins. Your real fearless, inherent, God-given confidence begins when you forget to care what anybody else thinks about what you're writing. You might care about it afterwards, but while you're writing, you can't. You can either ask yourself the question, what do I want to write? Or you can try to answer the question, what do other people want me to write? You can't answer both. And I would suggest you try to answer the question, what do I want to write? Because you can actually answer that one. All right, speaking of questions, Jeff,
I have one for you,
RJ, let's dive right in.
My own question is, because I so want to read this book, any kind of timeline for the new book, when it will be out?
Well, the timeline my publisher has given me is sometime in April, I believe. Could conceivably land right on my birthday. So that's the current timeline, but it all depends, you know. You hand the thing in, and we'll see what they want. We'll have to see how much rewriting they want me to do, if any at all. So that's a very tentative timeline. We'll say April. But as I know more, rest assured I will let everybody know.
Well, I'll be waiting. It's on my calendar. Okay,
excellent.
Well, first of all, I must thank all the amazing writers and poets who so graciously and generously sent their writing craft questions for today's show. They are outstanding. Also, I must again apologize ahead of time for any mispronunciation of anyone's last name as I read. The first question is from Jude Bittenhouse.
Okay.
These days, I find that my challenge is to continually ask, why am I writing? For me, writing is one of my spiritual practices, one of the ways I ask, who am I really? Why am I here? What am I noticing? What is mine to do? Bill, what is one of the greatest challenges we all face daily as writers, and how do we overcome it?
What is her question again? Why am I writing?
It's
her question.
The challenge is being in the flow, I believe, and in her spiritual practices. Just asking questions. Who am I really? And I think she's saying, why am I here as a writer? I think these are all related to a writer. What am I noticing as a writer?
Why am I writing? You know, this is the interesting thing. Here's what I would say. Here's what I'd say about that. I assume she's someone who writes not just in her journal, but she wants to share what she's writing. She's someone who has some professional aspirations. Is that true?
It is. Well, she actually is a very well-recognized and well-known spiritual writer. Mentor, coach, public speaker, workshops. She's
got it. Okay,
basically so what you and I do.
Okay, so she's doing this professionally, but there is the question of why am I doing it? You know, I would say this. One of the interesting things about, I've talked about the flow. You know, this is a common term, but it seems to make sense to me. And the reason I like the flow as I understand, as I describe it, is that state you sink into when you're writing that is sort of dreamlike in that you lose track of time. You generally lose track of the environment you're in and are more aware of the environment you're describing, whether it's a poem, which is a sort of environment of its own, or an essay or story or whatever. And if you really enter this, there becomes a kind of effortlessness to the writing. You may have to find it. It may not always come. But you begin, if you're writing fiction, you're listening to your characters more than telling them what to do. If you're writing even essays, which is like what I write, you are surprised by the ideas that come to you, even though you think you know all there is to know about these subjects. You begin to feel as though you're receiving the information more than making it up. And the reason flow works well as a verb is that it is as if you are riding on a current that has its own direction, and your job is simply to stay in it. You're not to build the river and fill it with water. It's already flowing. You just have to ride along with it and trust that it's taking you someplace meaningful. It is a fabulous experience, and I should point out, it in many ways contradicts the reality that we live when we're outside of it. Because when you're in the flow, one of the main qualities, A, you forget about time, you forget about the past, you forget about the future, you certainly forget about other people's opinions because you can't think what will the people think of what I'm writing and stay in the flow, you'll pop you right out. And there is, interestingly, within the flow, no good and bad. There is only what belongs in the story you're writing and what does not belong in the story you're writing. And this largely contradicts the reality outside the flow where there is talk of good and bad. There's lots of comparison. We're very aware of time. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. What time is it? What time am I have to be there? It's scheduled and so on. And the flow is characterized by effortlessness. The right word, the right scene, the right sentence is always the most effortless scene, the most effortless sentence, the most effortless choice. Whereas the world outside that can seem full of effort as we struggle against and we're bothered by this and bothered by that. One of the things I found about the flow is when I'm in it, it makes sense. In the same way, a story makes sense when I'm writing it. So in other words, I really understand a story when I'm writing it. When I'm not writing a story or an essay, I don't fully understand it in the same way. I can't really understand a conversation I'm going to have until I'm having it. I can't plan a conversation in my head, in my mind ahead of time. But when I'm in that flow and I'm in the story, then I understand it and then it makes sense. And by the way, then when I'm in that flow, I know why I'm doing it. Because as I'm doing it, I can't imagine anything else I would want to do. Nothing in my life has ever felt better. Things have felt as good, but nothing has felt better. Nothing has felt more meaningful. Nothing has felt more on purpose than when I am connected to that creative flow. And when I'm in that creative flow, I am living the why am I here. It's not an answer I find at the end of the river. It's in the river itself. Now, when I get out of that flow, I start doubting myself, and I wonder what the meaning of life is, and where will these journeys take me, and what will happen to this book, and what. But when I'm in it, there is no question. There is no question because I'm doing it. It is not for me, you know. Just like Jeff, RJ, I'm sorry, I have to remember what to call you. Just like it's not my job when I write a book to know what other people are going to think of it. It's not my job to know how many copies it's going to sell. It's not my job to know where it will travel around the world or what will become of it. It is my job to want to write it and write it. And really, the main purpose of my relationship with the thing I'm writing is that relationship of the writing. That's where I change. That's where I discover. That's where the excitement happens. Afterwards, the thing is published, and it goes around, and I have another relationship with it. But it's not my job to know ahead of time what that's going to be. If she can trust that river and trust, oh, this is good, and trust, RJ, trust that feeling good is reason enough. Let me say it again. Feeling good This is weird. Feeling good is all the meaning you need. The effortlessness of creativity, of connected, inspired creativity, is enough. You don't need to know more than that. You don't need to know more than that. Does that make sense?
It really does. It seems to me that the challenge really is allowing external peripheral influences to dam that flow.
And I would say another thing to her is this, that when you are writing and you are in that creative flow, you have met yourself. You've really met the truest portion of yourself. And I would also offer that that you're seeing reality as it actually is, and that the suffering and struggle we go through when we're out of that flow is a kind of illusion, and the effortless pleasure and excitement of discovery that we experience within it, which you can experience at any time. You can have it in the middle of a great conversation. You can do it when you're playing racquetball. You can do it when you're having sex. You can do it when you're doing business. It doesn't have to just be writing. It can be anything at all. It's just that writing, RJ, is such a focused experience in a certain way. And for those of us who've done it, we have practiced the experience of sitting down in certain places, certain times, and getting into that zone. I hope that the listeners have practiced that. And when you're in that experience, I have come to see that as reality, as it is meant to be experienced, and the life outside of it as a kind of illusion. If I can share that with other people, if I can share that experience with other people, offer that perspective to other people, the world becomes a better place in my mind. So I hope that helps her.
I'm sure that it will. We're about midpoint into the show. We'd love to have a call-in question. Off the
yes.
top would be, the phone number is 661-449-9357. Once again, 661-449-9357. Please feel free to call in and speak with Bill.
Absolutely.
Our
if
next
you
question
call...
is from Marilyn Cole, and I think this is going to resonate with everybody. She says, I had to think hard for this, but perhaps the one that I think about the most, and I imagine any writer would, is, when does one know that one's writing is good? Especially
no.
if it tends to be off the norm. I love the last part. Especially if it tends to be off the, in quotes, the norm.
Okay. What I would say is this. One of the foundations of the teaching I do around fearless writing is the only two questions you should ask when you're writing are, what do I want to say, and have I said it? By saying to myself, what do I want to say, you are tuning into your own inherently unique curiosity to say, what am I most interested in? Whether it's a story or poem, novel, memoir, whatever it is. But I could talk for an hour just on that question. But let's go to the second question. Have I said it? Have I said it? Or another way to say, is it accurate? In other words, is the thing on the page as interesting on the page as it is to me in my imagination? Is it as moving on the page the way I translated this image, thought, idea, which, by the way, Marilyn, came to you without language. It came to you as a feeling, as a thought, as a memory, as an idea, and you had to translate it into language. It is okay if that translation is not perfect the first time. It often isn't. It often takes time, the way we have to almost focus the lens of binoculars to see something at a distance. You have to translate it. You have to translate it until you find the language that best captures that felt experience of life that you want to translate. And when I discovered the question, is it accurate, it was such a relief to me because I stopped asking the question, is it any good? And is it any good, in my experience with writers, which at this point is substantial. My experience is that question really is code for what will other people think of it, period. Period. What will other people think of it? Because what one person thinks is good and another person thinks is good is not always the same. You can have two writing teachers and you can show them the same piece and they might agree that it was well written, or they might just as easily completely disagree. It does happen. And so the question, is it accurate, gets rid of the question, is it any good, because is it any good suggests that there is an external way to measure the value of writing. That is, it's not possible, and B, in your heart, Marilyn, you don't actually care about that. What you care about is, is what I have to share shareable with other people? Will it be interesting to other people? Yes, it will be. if you can accurately translate it into some kind of story, poem, essay. And the only way you can do it accurately is if you ask yourself, is this what I meant to say? You cannot translate it accurately if you ask, is it any good? Because there is no answer to that. There's no answer to it. There's only the answer, is this what I wanted to say? And I will say this to you, Meryl, when you can let that answer be enough. Yes, that's what I wanted to say. That is what I wanted to say. That's when you'll free yourself up. When you can let that answer be enough, you will begin to get the kind of responses you believe are associated with what you think of as good writing. And it will come when you stop caring about good writing. And then you'll say, Mike, and then people will start saying to you, you're an awfully good writer. And you'll realize that came when you stopped caring about, quote, good writing. It begins when you don't care about good or bad, but just, is this what I wanted to say? Good and bad, we might use that word to describe things we like or don't like, but let good and bad be in other realms. Within the realm of creativity, there's just what you want to make and what you don't want to make. And you would be amazed at the number of things that get created that you, Marilyn, might have no interest in, that you might call bad, but other people just love. So it goes. So that is my roundabout answer to that question. If you can forget about good and bad, that's when you begin to write the things that you think are good. Do you understand, RJ?
Oh, yeah, that's wonderfully, wonderfully expressed, and I know that's helpful to me and everybody listening. Once again,
it's a killer. It's a killer. It's a killer, people. It's a killer, thinking you have to be a good writer. Thinking you have to be a good writer because there's no answer to it. You can't answer it. You will never know. You will never know. Anything you write, people can criticize. Anything. Bob Dylan was criticized. Ernest Hemingway was criticized. James Joyce was criticized. Everybody is criticized. And in fact, sometimes the more attention you get, the more likely someone wants to criticize it.
Right, and so many writers that we know, their household names were rejected multiple times in their careers.
That's right, including J.K. Rowling and you name it. So there is no good and bad in that way. There is no good and bad.
I think this next question, Bill, is a nice segue. It's kind of similar to Marilyn's question, but it's a nice capstone. So Marlene Griffo, and I know I felt this, when I'm writing something I feel is my best effort, when do you know to just stop and say, okay, let's put a period on that and call it done? Especially
when do you abandon it? Right. Say again, what is your Achilles, RJ?
Achilles heel, when I'm especially writing poetry. Okay, Jeffrey, let's put a period on that, or no punctuation and call it done.
Right. So what I would say is this, writing is, in many ways, is about learning to be very sensitive to how you feel. And so, in other words, how do you know what the right word is, really? Well, the most effortless word is the right word, the word that isn't forced, the word that seems to fit like a piece in a puzzle that only you can see. So as a writer, you have to become more and more aware of the difference between, say, force and effortlessness. And in the same way, I would say that the decision as to when to stop has to do with the question of, are you writing out of love or are you writing out of fear? So in other words, are you writing because you can feel you can still feel the interest in the piece and a desire to get it even closer to what you wanted? That is a movement towards, and that is the feeling that should have brought you to the story in the first place. Ooh, I've got this idea, but the idea is not on the page, so you've got to write because you love the idea, but it's not even in any form that you can possibly show to anybody. So that desire to create brought you to the page. You should know what that desire feels like, that desire to create and to rewrite, because you know you're going to have to rewrite it at least once, almost always, but not all the time, but usually, yes, because that's not it. But that's not it from a creative place is delicious. Like, oh, I get to get even closer to the thing I wanted. Oh, that's awesome. That was pretty good, but let's see if we can do even better. Let's experiment. I get to spend more time here. It's delicious. It's interesting. You're curious. But then there's creating from fear, which is, what if it's not good enough? What will people think? Pay attention to the kind of questions you're asking yourself as you're rereading it. Do you find yourself imagining other people reading it? Do you find yourself looking through it through the eyes of some imagined person? If you're at that point, I would say step away from it. Never rewrite from that place. never rewrite for an imagined audience. I think most of that kind of over-rewriting comes from that, trying to perfect it for some imagined reader that you can't see. As long as it's genuine interest in the piece, keep going back. But if it's just to perfect it for someone you can't see, stop. Stop at that point. Maybe you stop and have to come back to it later and see if you can and sort of clear the cobwebs of that self-consciousness out of your mind, and maybe then you'll find a little more interest to get it that much closer. But if all that's really left is fear, it's done, I would say. Does that make sense, RJ, since you've struggled with that one?
That's the number one impediment. That fear, I think, is obviously synonymous with self-doubt.
Yes, and it would make sense, by the way, it would make perfect sense that this self-doubt would come right at, it's so obvious in a way. It's like a dream where the person tells you a dream and it seems so mysterious to them and it's clearly about their marriage or whatever. It's the same way with this. It's so obvious. Why, at the very end of a piece, would you become more self-conscious? Because you're getting ready to share it. This is the moment, you know, when the piece first comes to you, it's so nebulous and you're so far from finishing it, you'd have to work very hard to get self-conscious about what people will think of it. It's easy to put yourself into that bubble because it's nowhere near ready to show to people. But as it gets close to the end and you get close to the point where you know you're going to send it off, now it's very easy to start slipping at that point into thinking about what other people will think about it because that is so close to happening. I will tell you that writing the blog for Author Magazine that I did for years when I did it on a daily basis, in a way kind of cured me of it because everything I wrote was going to go out the next day. And I said to myself, I am not going to do what I normally do. I'm going to give myself 45 minutes and that's it. And that's the way I did it. So I kind of almost mechanically trained myself out of trying to perfect it and realize how good I could do, how dialed in I could be in 45 minutes. But that's really all that's happening. You're starting to think about other people at that point. So pay very close attention to what you're doing, RJ. Pay close attention to what you're thinking. Are you thinking about other people? It can happen so fast and so quietly, and you can be so used to the experience of that kind of third eye looking down on you that you don't even recognize it as being unnecessary and an impediment to what you're doing. You've done it probably for so many years, you don't even realize you're doing it. But pay attention. Do you feel good? Do you feel excited? Or do you feel that kind of sickly uncertainty? That's when you're trying to imagine what other people will think about it, and you will always feel insecure when you do that, always.
So would you expand and elaborate a little bit? I'm obviously curious. That shift, almost immediate shift from in that 45-minute window to write that. And by the way, if you have not read these blogs, shoot over to Author Magazine and spend days. They are phenomenal. They really
Thank
are.
Thank you, RJ.
Every writer, you're very welcome. So can you just elaborate how you were able to adapt and just make that shift to sit down and begin and be done in 45 minutes?
Yeah, I will. Let's see. I'll see if I can do it. We can end on that. It'll be a good little last note. Yeah, so my friend and the webmaster who was helping me put the magazine together said, Bill, you need to give us daily content. And I said, oh, impossible. I can't do that. He said, sure. You know, just write about any old thing. I said, okay, fine. And I did a couple tricks to myself. RJ, the first thing was I decided that no one was reading it. I was certain that even though we had this big mailing list, I had told myself, ugh, no one's really reading it. So in one way, I had created a kind of, even though I knew people were reading it, I told myself nobody was really reading it. So that little trick I did on my psyche was the first thing that allowed me to write with less self-consciousness. And then I said to myself, okay, I've got other projects. I don't want to spend a ton of time doing this, and I didn't think the blog was that important. I thought it was just there as a little note to people to remind them to keep going, but I didn't make a big hairy deal out of it. So that was another good thing I did. I told myself it didn't have to be the whole world. It could just be a little nice, easy something. And then the third thing I did is I said to myself, let's do it this way. Let's not think of each piece as trying to perfect it, but let's look at all the pieces as one giant body of work and assume that every day I'll get a little bit better at how to do something in 45 minutes. I don't have to figure it all out today. Every single day I'll learn more and more and more how to write in that amount of time. And lo and behold, after a few months of doing it, you know, 5 days a week, it got, from my mind, better and better and better, meaning I discovered more and more interesting things. I found the language came more and more effortlessly, and And soon I began to actually hear from my readers. But once I did hear from my readers, I had found that place of unconditional interest in the topic I was talking about. I had found that sort of lack of self, that unselfconscious place where I needed to write from, so that when I finally did hear from them and I couldn't deny the fact that people were actually reading what I was writing, I found it easy to forget about them again the next time I sat down to write. It reminds me a little bit, I always thought of the Beatles when they went to Hamburg when they were in very early 20s, when before they had burst onto the scene. They played like 10 hours a day or something, like they would hop them up on these drugs and have them just play all day long. But I always felt like when I read descriptions of that time about how that immersion in their art sort of worked out so many kinks. And I kind of felt like I went through something similar with the blogs. I had to write so fast and so often that I kicked out a lot of the kind of self-consciousness and self-awareness with language that I had built up doing other things, and just wrote fluidly and in my true voice, and found a lot of poetry and sort of insight that I think I wouldn't have if I was trying to craft something perfectly. Soon, they became more and more crafted, but more effortlessly and more organically. So that's how I did it, I believe.
Outstanding, Bill. Thank you for that advice for me, and I'm going to thank everyone else as well. I'm sure that they appreciate this. Bill, you teach these master classes, you have conferences, workshops. Where can people have a one-on-one? Where can they be in the presence of Mr. Bill, William Bill Knauer?
There's a lot of different ways to do it. I can do it to find me, go to williamknauer.com, and you can click on the Fearless Writing page or on that website. And I teach one-on-one coaching. I give keynote speeches, and I give workshops to writing groups. I can talk to anyone from a small group to a very, very large group, to an individual to a large group. And so this can be done one-on-one in person if you're in the Northwest, or I can do it virtually over Skype or FaceTime or whatever. I do that too. And so if you're interested in working with me in some form or another, head on over to williamknauer.com, contact me, and we'll set something up. I love doing this. I love teaching. I love talking to people about fearless writing, about living fearlessly, creating fearlessly. Living and creating fearlessly is really how we're meant to live, by the way. It feels so natural. It feels so good, because it is your natural state of being, and fear does not feel good because it's an unnatural state of being. So live and write fearlessly. It's why you're here. Going back to our first question, it's why you're here. It's why you're here, to express love, to live in love, to share love. When you write something you love, you share it. When you read something you love, you share it. Love loved loves to love, said James Joyce, and it's true. So find something you love and share it.
Because that is the operative word. That is the word love. Be in love with it, in love with it. And if you will be, I know that will transcend and that will be so recognizable by others. They'll know that you love it, and if they love what you're talking about, it's not a win-win, it's a love-love. And Bill, thank you again for another fascinating, amazing show. I had a blast.
And we'll do it again next week. We'll do it again next week. We got more questions. So if you want to call in next week, it's the same call. We'll give that number. But, yep, we'll do it again next week. Go find something you love and do it. RJ, you too. Go find something you love and do it. I know you will.